Ron, can you hear me? Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Hello. Well, good evening. This is Terry Dodd. This is Walls in Our Minds. We are looking very forward to visiting with our special guest, Ron Brackey, tonight. Ron, are you online? Ron?
Online.
Good. I'm hoping that everyone will be able to hear you via this connection. I'm suspecting that your home phone may not be as good as your cell.
Well, you can do the cell if you want.
Well, I'm hearing you better now. Kate, can you Dr. Kate's going to be on with us tonight, and she says that's good, so she can hear you now. Good. And Red Beckman, you're on with us.
I'm on.
Red, can I ask you to open us with a prayer?
I'll try. Right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Heavenly Father, we come to Thee knowing that we have a nation that's in serious trouble, and we know that we are not big enough or strong enough or powerful enough to make the corrections that need to be made. We need your help. We need your assistance. We need your wisdom. And we pray, dear Lord, that you would help us to have a standard for truth that the whole world would recognize our standard for truth as being so important and so necessary in the day in which we live, because that which is false just dominates everything. And we just pray now that you would help us to do the part that we need to do, what our responsibilities are, and we just pray that you would bless our guests tonight. And we pray that you would bless their conversation, and that people would understand that we are committed to a nation of truth, a nation of honesty and integrity, and we want to see it happen. And we can just, there's just no way we can do it without God's help. So we ask God to help us. And we ask this all now in thy precious name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much, Red. Well, Ron Brackey, I want to try to give you a proper introduction tonight. We've invited Ron on tonight to be our special guest and to discuss a number of different issues that he has expertise in. One is foreclosure fraud by the banking industry, the lending industry, and you've got a lot of knowledge, Ron, about the Federal Reserve and the court system and the police state that we exist in today. And, of course, you've been involved in a number of sovereign groups, from what I understand, and we might want to visit about sovereignty a little bit. And we want to talk a little bit about the Indian situation up there in North Dakota. And because of Dr. Kate's experience and track time in that area of the country, we certainly want to get her involved tonight in this discussion and have her join us. And Ron, may I ask you just to kind of give a little history on yourself so our listeners can become more acquainted with you?
Well, sure. I started fighting organized crime in 1962, and I didn't even know what it was I was going to do, but I knew that the marketplace was not fair. I knew that the Department of Agriculture was destroying farmers by the thousands, and I thought I had to take a look at what was going on in take a stand on what was right. And so I've been fighting organized crime ever since. And we had to get right down to where we had to do the process administratively even to get judges off the bench, to get attorneys out of the practice of law, and to clean up the banksters. Because I'll tell you, it was really something. And, of course, today, the biggest problem in America is the theft of equity, and it's basically because those involved in contracts do not know how to defend.
Well,
still there?
Yes, we hear you just fine. I'm hearing you fine. I'm not getting any complaints from anybody here, so I think the sound is working okay. I'm trying to be quiet when you're speaking because since we are on the same connection, it's important for other people to be able to hear you that I remain quiet. So sometimes I will I'll just let you flow freely and not try to interject when you're speaking. Red, you and Ron know about each other, so maybe you guys ought to open this up a little bit and get reacquainted with each other.
I have not been in North Dakota for a meeting for, my goodness, it's got to be at least 10 years and probably more. It was always a great place to be for meetings. There was always a responsive crowd, and I look back at some of the people that were there, and they were genuine Americans. They weren't the phonies. They were the real thing because they were productive people. A good American is going to be productive. You can sort out the American people. You've got the productive and the unproductive. And there's a big difference between them and the unproductive at this point in time are such a serious problem because as they try to make our system work as a democracy, the unproductive can outvote the productive. And that's one of the reasons why, in very simple terms, that's one of the reasons why we're in the sad state of affairs we are in today as a nation. And I really appreciate Ron. I always felt that I wasn't able to get back there, but the state was in some pretty good hands. There were some pretty good people, very good people, and hardworking people, people right from the soil. And North Dakota today, they can look out at the other states. Wyoming, of course, is financially sound, but it's North Dakota and Wyoming are two states out of the 50 that can pay their bills, and they're not making the same mistakes that most of the other states have done. Because they have a high percentage of their people are productive people. So, I've been at this game a long time, and they say that a good teacher is one who has people who become better acquainted with the law, better acquainted with information and truth than the teacher himself. And Ron is one of those people that has gone beyond me in what I have been saying, and I tell you, it's just a thrill to me to have him on this show tonight.
Well, Dr. Kate, would you like to give a greeting tonight? She's probably got herself muted. She takes a little delay there to come in. Ron, what would you like to talk about first? I'd kind of like to ask you a question related to the North Dakota Bank before we forget it, because I believe once we get into some of these other issues on foreclosure and stuff, I may very well never get back to it. So if I don't ask now, I may not get it in. You had told me something about who had taken over the North Dakota Bank and that things have changed and that it's not for the good. And would you mind giving us a little background on that?
Well, basically, I got to work with Herb Thorndahl when he was president of the bank.
You're fading out on me, Ron.
Governor, Secretary of Agriculture, and the Attorney General. And basically, they operated it like a taxpayer-owned bank. And it worked on projects. It did a lot of good. And Herb was a very honest man. When the administration changed to where Governor Sinner came in, he appointed Joe Eslam to run the Bank of North Dakota, and the first thing he did was sign it up to the Federal Reserve. So it became under regulation at that time. And from that time, it has done some good, but predominantly in the field of making loans for education, that type of thing. But it lost its real potential when that happened. And so we've never recovered from that in its usage. We did other things, but, we lost that freedom to do what was necessary in the development of things in North Dakota. But we're still living off of some of the things that were done by Herb Thorndahl and his staff. I basically don't have much bad to say about the Bank of North Dakota other than it was dethroned when it entered into contract with the Federal Reserve. And I'm not against the Federal Reserve and its law, but what I am terribly disappointed with is those within the Federal Reserve and in the operations of it aren't even knowledgeable in the law. And if they follow it, the provisions are there for every citizen in this country. You can do every single thing that a bank can do except for one thing. You can't charge a fee for it. That's the bottom line. And the Code of Federal Regulations under Title 12 are there for you to even directly access it after you have exhausted all other remedies. So if you got any questions on that, hit them now.
Red, were you able to hear him?
Not very well. I'm my ears are getting old, of course, and that doesn't help. And I don't complain if I can't hear because it might be mostly my fault, and I'm sure it is. It saddens me. I hadn't heard that the Bank of North Dakota had come under the, you might say, the umbrella of the Federal Reserve. I'm sure that the Federal Reserve people laughed all the way to the bank. kind of a cliche there. Because it, by taking over there, there's a tremendous amount of wealth in North Dakota, and now, of course, with the oil and the Bakken oil field, it's even going to be more wealth. And so the Federal Reserve, they're gonna use that wealth to accomplish their goals, and that's not a good deal.
Ron, comment?
Well, the law as the Federal Reserve is operating under, I had to confirm a bunch of that with somebody higher up that was knowledgeable, and so I made connection with a former governor of the Federal Reserve at that time, which was Governor Wayne Angel out of the Kansas City District. He was a member of the Board of Governors. He was appointed to fulfill an unexpired 14-year term, and so he was there for 8 years under that position. And I'd call him at home at night, and I'd ask him these questions because I wanted to know if the various sections of the law I had been reading were still valid. And he confirmed each one of them. And I really was impressed with his honesty. And the bottom line that people really need to know is that the Federal Reserve is the biggest single source of revenue the federal government has, because from its member banks through its national banks and the state banks go through nationals to access the Fed. And the bottom line is about half of the interest that's collected from the people by the local banks end up in the hands of the Federal Reserve. And they pay their bills out of that, and all the rest of it is added to the account of the Treasury of the United States. It's their biggest single source of revenue. It dwarfs the income tax. And so the government, when interest rates go down, it's going to be short money, no question about it, because they get a spending rate that's much higher than where the interest rate is now. But that's what it's for, and he made that real clear. And there were some sections of the law that I was asking him about as far as direct access. And, of course, the last conversation I had with him, I said, Governor Angel, are these sections of the code still good and valid? He says, yeah, Ron, yeah, they are. I said, what do we got to do to get the Fed to comply with these sections of the code? Well, he said, that's easy. All you got to do, Ron, is make us. Yeah, I didn't have a big army, airplanes, tanks, battleships. You hear me? I didn't have none of that. How are you going to make these people that don't even know the law themselves, not all of them, a few do, but I'm just telling you, those in the discount window and so forth, it was unbelievable. When the U.S. attorney subpoenaed them onto the witness stand in cases that were brought against me and others, they blew up every case because it was quite apparent to the judges, federal and state, that these people did not know the law. They were just violating it. So I've read the codes. I see the people's rights in there and the applications of it, and I'll tell you, we sent busloads of people to the Federal Reserve when they exhausted all other remedies. But the thing that really got the government against me was in the case which ended up with the name Coleman versus Block. It was brought in North Dakota before Judge Bruce Van Sickle, and it barred the Farmers Home Administration from foreclosing on farmers. Just flat ordered it. Why? Because there's an administrative remedy there that must be applied. And that's just not the Department of Agriculture's Farmers Home Administration. That's the same way with HUD, FHA under HUD, and under the VA, and under the SBA, which is for small business. My goodness, you know, I followed the transaction of the famous leader of Chrysler. He got a rural address, went to the Farmers Home Administration, and got millions of dollars. And he personally signed the note creating that much capital to bail out Chrysler. When he got the money paid back, And he did, paid every penny of it back. He retired. But you got to have somebody on the line for this creation of capital, because we have a dead capital system. We're not teaching it in our schools. People have no idea what it is. But I can tell you one thing. If you pick up a pen and you sign a promissory note, you just created that much capital. If you think I'm kidding you, read the Comptroller of Currency Act of 1864, and you'll see from that day forward an old bank that was commercial in operation and had that privilege could lend deposits, checking, or savings. It's the individuals that sign the note creating the capital. That's what the debt capital system is about. And you expect a trustee to hold that note safe in their vault. The only one I found that were holding the note safe had no vault, but they were the government agencies. They had them. But the banksters, you could never tell where they were. And then the larger the banks got, the more they shredded the original capital creations. And thus, no court would have subject matter jurisdiction on any so-called foreclosure without that original note being filed with the clerk of that court. Bottom line, you have to have subject matter. And then they got to have your permission. They got to have personam jurisdiction. They got to have both to have jurisdiction. You even got to teach the judges that, because they're so used to slam dunking for the banksters. Anyway, we won that case in 1984, and the government didn't bother to tell any of its help it lost the case. But it never appealed it either, and we had it classed in 45 states of this country. And I want to tell you, it's never been overturned. It stands today. But the reason the government didn't appeal it, they didn't want it to be higher up on the list of case law decisions. Case law is not law. It's just what somebody else was able to pull off in the process. And we got it, and Bruce Van Sickle stood behind it. And I was there when he made the decision. And, you know, and I was very grateful for him for calling it what it actually is. And so that set it all. And there's no reason why anybody that's in financial trouble out here isn't at the door of an agency getting the applications, getting a copy of the note they use, a copy of the mortgage or the deed of trust that they use, and take them home and get it filled out and get it done. Because a lot of those people working there don't even know what their job is. You got to know they're your employees, and you got to give them the instructions. But if you don't know the law, how can you give anybody instructions?
Well, now I want
like a rampage.
Well, that's
okay.
That's okay, Ron. I want to come back to this topic of foreclosure and get into that heavier. But you've said a couple of things here that I need to get clarification on, because I guess I'm a little confused. I understand that the Federal Reserve is strictly a private organization owned by the international banks families and not a part of the federal government. And I've also understood that they have been...
Well, they handle the government's account on the collectors in this country. They're it. They can use it from their member banks, do the collecting and forward it to them. Then they just pay their bills out of what comes in, and bang, the rest goes to the Treasury of the United States.
Well, I've heard tell that the Treasury is not run by our government either. But all that we've been told, and I've never seen anything in any budget showing income coming into the federal government from the Federal Reserve. It's always been the other way around, and that's all the interest that's being paid to the Federal Reserve by the federal government out of our taxes.
Well, you've been, people that are not of age of retirement, or for one reason or another are unable to collect Social Security, whatever has been paid into that goes zip, and the government spends it. It isn't in a trust account. They spend it as it comes in.
Well, it was my understanding that they're borrowing from the Federal Reserve to pay for all of these things.
Well, a dead person can't borrow anything. You have to have a live body create the capital, and people are believing there's borrowing going on. I'm here to tell you there's clearing going on.
Clearing of what?
Clearing of instruments. You ever seen a credit card?
Sure.
That's created out of state law, South Dakota Codified Law 4714. And that's where the credit cards have to, the companies have to register there as a company doing business. Got to have the permission from the Secretary of State, and then bang. And what happens when you fill out the credit card application? That's a promissory note, in fact, but it's blank until the credit card company puts in the amount. And that's a creation of M2 of the money supply, not M1.
Well, I understand that, but I'm
card claim.
I'm sure you just left a few people on the difference between M1 and M2. Would you care to give a brief description?
Well, there's four kinds of money in this country. M1 is the Federal Reserve note, and that's all backed by hard assets. Make no mistake about it. Land, equipment, buildings, you hear me? Tools. Backs it. Right now, it's only 35% indebted to total current appraised value.
But are those assets owned by the Federal Reserve or by the government?
That's indebtedness against the assets created by the people.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve is ahead of the ball game in that the banksters have to post reserves at the Fed. Of course, they did change the law in 1980 to where the large banks can go all the way down to zero reserves. But the small banks, they still got to have 7%. And that's business cash in possession of the Fed for them to operate. So when there's a non-performing loan on the bank's books, that shortens the amount of free reserves that they have for making transactions. As you see, their reserves have to cover the transaction until the ink is dry. In other words, you've signed the promissory note, you've signed the mortgage, or in some states, the deed of trust, and it's recorded on the public record. Bang. Then the reserves are released. When the note falls in default, then those reserves are sucked in there. Well, I've been asked by bankers in various areas to make presentations as to how you can use another system of rewrite to keep them in a position of keeping their doors open, because if you can take a non-performing loan out of the bank, rewrite it with another trustee and bring it back as a current obligation to repay, the bank is not, it's got its reserves released. And I think the biggest meeting I ever had was in Schulenburg, Texas. There's about 400 bankers there from the state. And boy, did we get a lot of help from those bankers in the rewrite of debt. They cooperated. So the debtor could walk in, well, inform the bank that he was going to rewrite it elsewhere and bring it back as a performing asset. If the bank cooperated, boy, it went slick. If the bank didn't cooperate, then we had to do the run-through all the way up. First government agency, and if you returned down there, then you had access to the Fed discount window. And you could order the Fed, you know, to balance that bank. There's also one thing that's pretty darned important, and being that you are the breathing person that signed and created the capital, the Fed can't charge you interest. But you got to make the principal payments. Why? Because you promised to pay it back. And when you make payments on principal, that capital ceases to circulate. It ceases to exist. Are you hearing me? The only defect in the whole system, is, other than the Fed people not following the law at from time to time, is the fact that at the time you create the principal for something, you've not created the interest. Are you hearing me? So you've got to go into the marketplace and get somebody else's capital out of it in order to pay your interest. Interest can recirculate, but the bottom line is there's always a shortness of money in circulation. Always. And that's the only fault I see with the system. But if a person knows that up front, they can be more conservative and bail themselves through it. But the best thing is not to bother with signing agreements at all. That would force us to get back to other forms of medium of exchange.
Well, I want to come back to that question that I asked.
Nevertheless, there's nothing wrong with that Federal Reserve note. There's nothing wrong with that Federal Reserve note. I'm here to tell you.
Well, how are those assets backing that Federal Reserve note? Are those assets that you're talking about owned by the Federal Reserve, or are those assets owned and controlled by the government?
They're owned and controlled by the individual after the ink is dry and all the paperwork.
Okay, so you're talking about the assets of the people that are collateralizing the debt. That's what you're referring to.
No. They buy property of one kind or another with the, after they sign that promissory note, because once they give the bank the promissory note, the bank takes it to the back of the bank and runs a voucher on it right away. And people are of the belief that they borrowed somebody's money. No, they just created it. And that transaction was done in the form of a voucher, and bang, it's deposited in your account, or there's a check written out to the person it's going to be paid for. You know, it's going to be paid for the property. Bottom line.
Well, let's shift gears to the foreclosure topic, because I believe that's going to be a little bit more interesting to the folks here. Can you explain a little bit about the fraud that has happened and why the lenders have been losing court cases and where they've been trying to foreclose on people and exactly how that came about and why?
Well, those that stand up for their rights and do the follow-through, they preserve. They stand. They have their property. But those that operate on the basis of perception and hire somebody else to assert their rights, it's gone. It's just a matter of time, because the biggest business in America today is the theft of equity. And you got equity in property, number one, if you put a down payment on it. Number two, if you've made any payments on it, you got equity in it. Are you hearing me?
I hear you loud and clear, but I think we need to be very, very methodical and mechanical about explaining this. You mentioned about people who stand up for their rights and do not have somebody else that is that's representing them. What do you mean by that? And how and exactly what is it that they need to do to stand up
for
their rights?
Basically this, when you hire somebody to represent your most basic rights, you get to lose because there's nobody that can assert them but yourself. You're it. you don't have a privilege that somebody can cancel. You're there as a matter of right, and you must insist that the original documentation be produced. Why? Because if there's a judgment, guess who gets the promissory note back? The person that created it. No, the banksters want anybody to sign, create the capital, and then bang, they'll get tripped up, and then the bank keeps the promissory note. Let's just say it's a 30-year one. They'll keep it till it expires and use it because you gave them the money. The people aren't watching to see to it that that stuff is delivered so that the clerk of court can cancel that before the judgment is entered. You can't be held twice. There can't be a judgment against you and the promissory note out there also. That's double enrichment. People just do not know the basics of a debt capital system, and they're not teaching it in school.
Well, and the
I'm going to tell you, if you don't know that, or you don't know the law and the process, I'm talking about the legal process of using the court process. If you don't know how that's done, and the time you graduate from high school and start signing, you're destined to be enslaved for the majority of your life. And you may lose everything along the way.
Well, you're talking about the documentation. You're specifically referring to the note itself, the promissory note.
And the mortgage or the deed of trust.
Okay, but a lot of these places have actually shredded those documents. Now, why did they do that?
They knew so little about what they were doing, they didn't realize that the fundamental documents is the basis of the capital system in this country. It's a debt capital system. Why do they want to hire help to protect those instruments? They like using computer bleeps.
Well, you've been advising some folks.
It's just the theft of property and their keeping of the benefit, the numbers on the note, even though they don't have the documents.
If you were being foreclosed on today, what specific actions would you take to protect yourself?
Number one, turn the attorney into the Bar Association that's bringing the action because he's failed to produce proof. He's authorized. Are you hearing me? Authorized to represent the bankster by the president of the bank. And he's not representing anybody. Banks don't trust lawyers. Lawyers don't trust banks, but they'll steal for each other.
So you're looking for the written off.
The second thing is to check. If you check with the Secretary of State, see if they're registered to do business in that state, because if they're not, they can't use state courts as a matter of law. You got to be registered. You got to have a certificate of authority and a live body responsible for the behavior of that company in that state.
Okay, so you go after the attorney to prove his authorization to represent them. You mean, but the court just...
No, you turn him into the bar and say, he's a scam artist. He doesn't possess any of the documentation. He's not authorized, especially on the credit card thing, because nobody can compel payment of M1 on an M2 debt. You have to have the equivalent of banker's acceptance for that. And anyway, there's no credit card company ever turns the contract over to any lawyers to bring claim. So whatever the lawyers are able to scam out of somebody, they get to keep. And nobody can compel you to pay M1 and an M2 debt. There's M3 and then there's L. You know, have you ever cut a coupon out of a newspaper or a magazine or an advertisement and taken it to the, let's just say, the grocery store or to offset something on, let's just say, a dollar, for the, because you're purchasing this thing, you take a dollar out. Well, you have to have the cashier's acceptance of that dollar off, or it's just a piece of paper. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Follow the terms and conditions, and you got to have acceptance.
Well, but if you hire an attorney,
now,
that attorney...
If they refuse to take your cash, and
if you hire an attorney...
If a court refuses to take... I got to wait till you're done.
Well, I thought you were waiting.
If you anybody refuses to take the Federal Reserve note as payment, an obligation, you commence the process to have them put out of business.
Okay, but if you hire an attorney, that attorney...
I've called in the Comptroller of Currency in Washington, D.C. Well, I'm here to tell you. And not even banks know that the Treasury checks and so forth, any bank has to honor it. Otherwise, boy, you move to have them closed.
Well, but if you hire an attorney, that attorney is not going to report the other attorney to the bar. And from what I'm hearing...
That's right. You got to do that. You're the one that allowed him to have the privilege in the first place, and every attorney got the privilege from the Supreme Court of the state to practice, in other words, so that the bar can take his dues. I'm going to tell you something. I've seen quite a few attorneys where the Bar Association refused to take their dues, and when they do not take their dues, they're done practicing.
Now, you said something earlier about if you let somebody else represent you, there was a problem. What's that problem again?
The problem is simple. You've waived all the questions of law and have gotten into the argument of facts.
I didn't understand
you waived
that.
Your constitutional right. I mean, they're gone. Because you've contracted with a person that's under contract.
Okay. What other actions would you take with the court besides reporting the other attorney, the one that's prosecuting against you, or the claimant against you, reporting them? What would you do with the court to protect yourself?
Remember, you're allowed to do what is called a judicial conduct complaint on any judge for impropriety or even the appearance of impropriety. And those judges were put there by the banksters. God, I got sent to the state penitentiary by a banker's judge who he funded to become judge in North Dakota, an old classmate of mine. I'm telling you, they put you away. So I thought, being that my secretary was also involved in that case, that I would seek a level lower and of more ability for her to have help. And so I got her a former attorney of the famous Chicago a gangster, and he came in from Bemidji, Minnesota, and he said, "Ron, you can't win this case. It's politically stacked against you." I said, "I know that, Whitney." I said, "Your job in court is to make the record. That's all that's expected, is that the record be made. We'll take care of that on appeal." And he made the record. He made it twice. I'll tell you. And we were both slam dunked, et cetera, et cetera. But then when we got to the Supreme Court, we were both acquitted. Why? Because we made the record. There was no charge. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you've been inside any of those federal or state facilities, you'll find real quick a lot of people pled guilty. Why? Because they were overcharged in the first place and their attorney convinced them to plead guilty. Bottom line, they pled just to get rid of the problem and end up with free board and room. Not even charged lawfully with a crime.
So there's people out there that...
To my study. Well, I'm just telling you, 95% of them that I ran into in a federal facility were never charged with a crime in fact. And either one guy spent $550,000 on a defense. And he was never charged with a crime in fact. Why? Because the U.S. attorneys falsified death certificates. And four people showed up and testified for him at trial, but that was 9 years after they were dead. There's people don't even bother to get a copy of the grand jury transcript so they can read what, if any, lies were given to the grand jury for probable cause. And in most of the cases, there never was a grand jury in fact. Therefore, there never was an indictment. And there is no grand jury concurrence form signed by at least 12 grand jurors voting to indict. Their attorneys can go to their computer and just put the word indictment in big letters, and people believe that. Man, you got to have the basis for it. Those are all the questions of the law. Boy, if anybody lies to the grand jury, you find one lie in there, that's it. Case is over.
Again, I'd like to understand better
in the
level of case that requires a grand jury indictment. The law states capital crimes and other infamous crimes. How is that defined? How do you define what qualifies as infamous?
Well, it has to be statutorily one. In other words, it has to exist in a code of federal regulations or in a code of regulations authorizing a particular section of the code to be charged criminally. Now, And when it's not, believe you me, there won't be a grand jury indictment because the U.S. attorneys or the county attorneys or the attorney general of the state, they don't want to be held responsible for what they're doing. But people plead the information fully. You move to dismiss it. You're entitled to an indictment. Why? Because you want the record of who testified to what and what they testified to. I'm just telling you, 95% of the people, this is my numbers now, nobody else's, 95% of the people I saw in this one facility that I got them to furnish me their so-called indictment were never charged, in fact. Never. And isn't that something? And they wrote 2 one-paragraph letters, and in 2 weeks, they're on the street. Because you can't be sentenced when you're not charged.
Okay.
They do a lot of political... They do a lot of political prosecution in this country, too.
You got that right.
More political prisoners locked up than any other country in the world.
And that seems to be on the rise.
Yes, it is. They got to show they're busy. And then there's one other thing that's so important. And what I'm telling you is what I did. The bottom line was I decided... that enough of this signing and agreeing with organized crime. I stopped signing, absolutely. Stopped signing their ship. And I'm here to tell you, they can't collect from the taxpayers for your keep unless they got your signature in fact.
Again, what do people need to do with the court to protect themselves in a foreclosure action, besides going after the attorney that's representing the lender?
Number one, to protect the property, they've got to get them to produce alleged documentation, and it has to be produced pursuant to the rules of evidence. Which is another whole set of what people aren't taught in school. The rules of evidence, the only way, is a person that actually personally witnessed you signing, or they put you on the witness stand and you testify that indeed that's your signature. But even if they got pictures of it, not your job to testify against yourself, it's their job to prove it. And they ain't got the proof. Because the real question is, Judge, let's put this president of this bank on the witness stand here and ask him whose money he lent. If he says he made a loan. That's why you never see any of those people in court. What's he going to do? Under oath on the witness stand say, well, he got the money from you? Case over, Judge.
You made a comment to me on the phone the other day that you would rather have a judge adjudicate your case than a jury.
Yes.
What was the point?
Absolutely. And there's a good reason for that. Number one, the judge is more knowledgeable in the law than the jury is. The jury was never taught the law or the process in school, so it doesn't know it. And the judge is going to give the jury instructions anyway. Bottom line, the judge is going to give them. Yeah, the attorneys may haggle over them a little bit, make some modifications, but it ain't enough to amount to a pinch. The bottom line is it's a lot easier to overturn a judge on appeal than it is a jury. It's buck passing in the system when they dump it onto a jury. I have never won a jury case in my life. The ones I won were before judges.
But you're saying that on an appeal, you're saying that the odds go up on appeal if it was a judge's decision rather than a jury's decision.
That's right.
Red Beckman.
Because there's nobody to pass the buck to.
Red Beckman has spent a good amount of energy over a lot of years trying to educate people on their right to judge the law. And on how they can nullify bad law as a juror, whether as a grand juror or a petit juror. And he's had some success with that, but it appears to me that nationally there has not been a great deal of success with that. And I was hoping Red would chime in on this and kind of talk with you a little bit about this and come to some kind of mutual agreement, if that can happen.
Well, I'll tell you, we did some research in some courts to see what was going on. And there's one here not very far from me. We did the research on that one, and the clerk of court didn't have any idea how to select a juror. Clerk didn't know, so it was the prosecutor that selected them all. And you ought to see what the average of who becomes foreman of the jury. Here's a government employee
Well, what's been discovered, of course, and I don't know if you know who Commander...
You're dealing with a stacked deck. In other words, there's no better response that even if you know nothing about the law, to go through the process yourself, being in charge yourself, and preparing the paperwork yourself, even if you don't know. At least you're going to get an education in the time you're all the way through it. I'm going to tell you, you build that reputation up, and your learning learns really fast, especially when you're in desperate circumstances. You learn quicker. The bottom line is, pretty soon they're not going to mess with you because you're too much trouble. I've even had them beat me unconscious, haul me into the federal courtroom, right there on a mail cart, and select a public pretender for me. How many people have ever had a public defender? I call them public pretenders. How many of the people have ever asked for the copy of the public defender agreement, wherein the judge signed it, the prosecutor signed it, and the public defender signed it? Read the deal, and you'll see. No defense intended. We even caught him here in North Dakota where they were using taxpayers and they didn't even have the contract. They're using taxpayers' money.
Do you generally challenge the oath of office of a judge?
We don't know the process. Pardon?
Do you generally...
Did you restate that, please?
Yes. Do you generally demand to see the oath of office of the judge?
Well, in any case, yes, it's your job to be sure you've got an official one sitting there and not a putz. Because when they take that oath, it's to uphold the Constitution, federal and, if it's a state judge, and state. Man, you got to assert those rights. Nobody can assert them on your behalf.
Well,
look in the mirror just in case you get confused.
I'm being told that judges across the country are advising defendants that they are not to bring a constitutional argument before them. And if they do, then they're going to throw them in jail.
Fine, but if they're going to throw me in jail, they got to damn carry me the whole way, and I sign nothing. I've been through that process, and one day they put me in the jail in Fargo, North Dakota, and I knew something was up because they weighed me first. You see, I'm heavy. It takes four to carry me, and if you're a lady, you may even take four ladies to carry you. No men can carry a lady. Are you hearing me?
Yeah.
But anyway, they put me on the scale. They had a big platform scale there. They put me on it, and they took the weight down, and then they put me in this jail cell, and they saw through it. I didn't have any food for 35 days. No water for 35 days, except for I managed to recruit water out of the toilet. And you don't get to use the toilet a whole lot after 3 days. And anyway, the first thing they did 35 days later was come and get me. And, of course, they had to carry me. And they had to, because I was going to court for alleged sentencing. And they put me on the scale, and I was down 35 pounds. I lost a pound a day sleeping on cement. Yeah.
That sounds more like they were
and
trying to...
I thought that was so funny. I was as heavy now as when they put me in jail.
Well, yeah, but it sounds like they were trying to kill you.
Well, they don't really do that till they shoot at you. And I set up a scenario one day after I was shot at, suspecting it was a Fed that did it. You know, we got federally funded SWAT teams, you know, that are operating under alleged sheriff's jurisdiction. And I mean, we were raided one day by a 12-man SWAT team, all with AR-15 machine guns. And I was beaten up and hauled off, and so was my wife. She was beaten up, but she wasn't hauled off. My wife never, she was still black and blue the day she died from that. They came out to collect for a bankster because he had sold himself life insurance policies on my life and on her life. Are you hearing me? And he was the beneficiary, and he was paying the premium. And so if he can get these nuts, you know, we had Machine Gun Kelly out there and Babyface Dawson.
You're still there? Kate, are you hearing me? Kate? So you're still hearing me. Well, I'm not hearing anybody else. I'm hoping I haven't dropped the call. Ah, we dropped him. That's what happened. Ah, thank you, Charles, for letting me know. I just checked my Skype, and the connection for Ron dropped off. I'm going to get him back on here.
And I
bear
just
with us for just a minute.
And Red is live as well.
I'm here, yeah.
Well, good. It's reassuring to hear voices, you know. Red, have you been listening to what Ron's been saying?
Yeah. This has been going on now for this kind of thing has been going on for a long time, and he has a lot of perseverance. He does not back off, and you know, that's to his credit.
Well, it's kind of hard to argue with first-hand experience like he's had.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't go the route that he has, of course. He's everybody's personality is different. You have to be yourself. You can't.
Hello.
Hello, Ron. We dropped your connection.
Here.
Red is speaking, and I'm going to let him finish. I know it just dropped off. I don't know how it dropped. But we got you back on now. That's what counts.
I got a pretty good idea.
Red, you were saying.
Well, everybody has to be, you have to be yourself. You can't, be a mimic, your own personality, your own abilities. That's what you have to stick with. Because as sure as you try to be, some high-powered lawyer or something, you're going to really stub your toe. It's not going to work. So Ron has been at it a long time, and he's been through the mill, and he's still in the battle. And for the most part, the opposition that we face in our ongoing battles. These are people that are working, they're doing what they do for a paycheck. They're not doing what they're doing because of a commitment to honest government or anything else. If they have somebody give them an order, that's what they like. You know, if somebody tells them what to do, they'll go out and do it. And those are the most dangerous people in the world, are the ones that work for wages, for government, or for a tyrant, and they don't think for themselves or anything else, and they go out and do some terrible atrocities with people. Alexander Solzhenitsyn says that about 60 to 65 million Russians were murdered and such by their own countrymen. And so that's what we're experiencing in this country, is a lot of people are being injured, they're being damaged, they're being hurt, because there's hirelings out there, government hirelings out there, that'll do whatever they're told, and so many times what they're told is not according to the law or anything else. And so, you know, it's a criminal government, and we have to come to that conclusion, and we have to adjust to it as best we can. I just wish we had a lot more Ron people out there doing, you know, the kind of thing that he does.
Well, Ron, you have you faced a lot of stuff with this federal government, especially working with the Indians. And I asked you another question the other day, and if there's something else you would like to finish a thought on when you dropped off the call, feel free to do that. Is there something else you wanted to add to what you were saying before? I think he dropped again. We're doing real good here with this connection with him. Hopefully be able to keep him on. I'm not losing my Skype connection. It's staying up good. It's just a connection with his home phone that I'm having problems with. Well, one thing that I've noticed is that, and I'm hoping, Ron, are you back on with us? Ron? Well, it's showing the connection, but I think I'm going to try him on his cell phone. I got a feeling this is going to be a better connection anyway. I asked Ron a question the other day. Why that the federal government refused to recognize the particular band of the Chippewa tribe that he's a spokesman for?
Say again.
Hi, Ron. Oh boy, that's a much better connection.
Yeah.
Oh,
it is.
You're clear as a bell now. I was just telling everybody about the question that I asked you the other day about the Little Shell Pembina Band and why the of the Chippewa Nation of Native Americans, and why the federal government was refusing to recognize them as an official tribal group. And your answer to me was because they owe them money, talking about the federal government or the Treasury owing the Chippewa Native Americans money, and because of that, they refuse to recognize them. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Because you're not the only group that's having this problem. I mean, there's a number of different people out there that the government owes a substantial amount of money to, VK Durham Trust, for example, which they owe money off of that Peruvian bond that they hold. And I'm talking trillions and trillions of dollars. And they just absolutely refuse to acknowledge the existence of that credit or debt that's owed to them. And I wanted you to be able to talk about that a little bit.
All right. Well, the bottom line is there are tribes that have ceded away their treaty rights. In other words, they actually contracted them away for certain privileges, such as having the BIA on their premises, having government control in one way or another there. The Pemina Nation Little Shell Band never entered into that, although they did enter into a treaty with the United States in 1863. And they're still waiting for the check. For so many acres of land. They didn't sell all their land. They sold some of it. And it's a pretty big a tribe as a whole. But also, they've done something else. Being that they weren't able to do much in the line of winning, they thought it was because they had so few tribal members as a whole. Well, there's those people like myself that know exactly how government acts, behaves, how banksters act and behave, and law enforcement. You can find a few law enforcement officials that are decent people, but boy, you can't find many of them, but you can find a few of them. And the bottom line is these people aren't going to give it up, and treaty rights fall right under the Constitution. It's Article 6, Paragraph 2. The Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land, and the treaties of the United States are the supreme law of the land. So if you are a member of a treaty tribe, you have registered and been naturalized, you have the right to try to assert an offset on collection. But no scam artists, because those, their chief sees to it, are run out. Are you still there?
I'm still here. Now, they've accused you of being a scam artist on occasion, have they not?
Well, all along. But the problem that they've had is I'm not standing up for my rights for profit. So it always ends up falling in a hole for them. And I want to tell you that one of the things people have not taken the time to look for is where can you live where there's a decent sheriff and where there's a decent county attorney? Well, we got one here, one of each.
What do you, how do you define decent?
They aren't out running scams and they won't carry out these bullshit deals that banksters want them to carry out or feds want them to carry out. They just won't do it. They feel their job is to be here to protect the people. How about that? And neither one of them are dummies. I'm here to tell you they're smart people and they're good, decent people.
Well, let's give a practical example of that. Red, you've talked about how the Internal Revenue Service will fail to get a signed order by a legitimate judge, and in some cases will sign their own warrants. Is that not the case?
Well, they have what they call pocket summons, and that is a summons, not a warrant. That's the problem. They'll make up their own, and of course, the Internal Revenue Service is, they're a rogue bunch of agents. You know, there's a lot of cases where the courts have ruled against the IRS, but the IRS does not honor the judge's orders. And the National Commodity and Barter Association out of Denver. They were raided, and the government took a bunch of their money and such. And when it went to court, the association won, and the IRS was ordered to restore the money that they stole, but they never have, as near as I know. And that's been like 25 years ago, probably, since that happened. And the IRS, they just thumbed their nose. So it's a, you know, it's just more evidence that it's a criminal syndicate that we're tangling with, that we're trying to, you know, protect ourselves from these this criminal syndicate. And it's pretty tough to do the way it is today, but you know, there's a lot of good things happening in our world right at this time, and because there's a lot of people waking up, and of course you got the Tea Party people are stirring, and they are trying to learn how the system is supposed to function and all that. So we didn't have this the Tea Parties. We didn't, you know, we didn't have those kind of things back there 10 years ago. And back further, the government can't get away with some of the same things they were doing 20 years ago. They can't get away with it today.
Is that what you were kind of referring to, though, Ron, as far as a sheriff who would not allow these guys to come in without proper documentation and serve it on someone?
That's right. And the bottom line is, I don't see a federally funded SWAT team out here either that are trying to collect on life insurance policies. They'll steal anything. But the thing people miss is this: when they come to the door, hold it. You got a court order? Let's see it. You got a writ of execution? That has to be signed by the sheriff. Let's see it. You got a warrant? I want to see it. I want to see the original. You're entitled to see the original, and you're entitled to have a copy. And by the way, in North Dakota, if you're going to take something, you got to have a bond for twice the value of what it is you're going to take. Let's see it. When the SWAT team came to my yard, they didn't have nothing. So they didn't like the fact that I wouldn't cooperate helping them steal. But I had, you know, there's blessings that come from on high. One of the lead insurance men in our region of the country come to the mailbox when there was three machine gunners there with these belts of carrying these belts of ammunition because I was supposed to be bad. There they wouldn't let anybody come in or anything. And by golly, when he went back to town, he went to see the other agent that could sell liability insurance to the county, and they agreed the county should have no more liability insurance. And so 2 days after their raid, all of Cass County, North Dakota, lost its liability insurance coverage. The sheriff's department, the clerks of court, the county commissioners, All of them lost the liability insurance coverage, so they couldn't even function lawfully anymore. And we had to do that one county to another out here to finally get this thing cleaned up. Then they get a new legislature in, and all of a sudden, now they've hooked the liability of all of this staff in this state onto the taxpayers. The taxpayers in this state are now responsible for all of their behaviors financially. I mean, they'll take it down lower than low. People in this state don't even know. But we had to cancel the liability coverage, so during the time in which they operated, they were operating unlawfully because the law required them to have it. Well, if they can get away without coverage, why is anyone else buying liability insurance?
Is it required that the feds acknowledge the tribe? Is it can the state acknowledge the tribe?
Well, the state of Montana has recognized them. Believe you me, the attorney general of this state and the governor knows of them. And their numbers are growing fast, clean across the country.
What,
right now, they, excuse me, go ahead.
Aside from being paid possibly part or all of the money that's owed to them, what other benefit would there be to the tribe in order to have the feds give them proper recognition?
Well, I put it this way. The numbers are still growing. The political sport is still growing. The numbers when it comes to the ballot box, actually, the tribes in the state of North Dakota got enough so they can basically control any election because they got that many. Native Americans, and some of them, you know, are down to a fourth Native American. They're thinning out as far as that, but there's a little more of them. And then, of course, there's those that have been registered and naturalized that are standing up for the rights of the tribe. Why? Because they're a part of it, and it's their rights, too. This country took in a lot of people from other countries and registered them and naturalized them. Well, so did this tribe. And what's the job? Collect. For those that are in financial trouble, offset a collection. And there's federal law to support it. You got to do some filings, but so be it.
Well, if the federal government's not recognizing them, do they still have those benefits?
Well, let's put it this way. The only benefits you have are the ones that you make and that are covered under treaty.
And the treaty does exist.
You betcha. We've got numerous certified copies in Washington, D.C.
So I could become a naturalized citizen of the Chippewa Native Americans.
At the Pamina Nation Little Shell Band, yeah. Yeah, and there are other tribal members that have joined because they see the action, the standing up for what's right. And we don't discriminate against any other tribe whatsoever. Anything we can do to help them, we do.
Well, who does somebody contact if they would like to become a member of this tribe?
All they got to do is request a form.
And where do they?
And there's all kinds of members across the country, so they got to find one, get a form.
They have to find a member.
That's one way. It's awful hard to keep a mailing address when the government doesn't like you. You know, they still have control of the post office. They still have the say, absolute in their nature.
Is there a website somebody can go to and get a form?
No. Was there? Yeah.
I'm sorry?
But those... There was one, yeah, but you can't keep it. It gets caught up too, and they shut it down. Same way with the mailing. Yeah.
They won't let you keep a mailing address?
Right. They close them. I have not been able to have mail delivered by the U.S. Post Office for many, many years. Since 1990, I haven't been able to get mail. However, I do have a mailbox. And everyone ought to have one. Right out on the property. It's right there. Very clear. And the only mail I get is from those that are insiders that know of some unlawful action taking place by some government employee, and they submit the name and the proof and the supporting documents and so forth, and they dump it in my mailbox because they don't want me to know who gave it to me. And they don't send it through the mail because it'd never get to me.
So just private individuals know where your mailbox is and they deliver stuff to you anonymously.
It gets there. A lot of it's hand-carried, but so be it. It's the most dependable system we've found. But I like what government employees have furnished. I mean, it was quite by accident one day. Are you still there?
I can't believe junk mail can't find you. That's hard to
believe. I haven't had any junk mail in all that period of time. Unbelievable.
So if I join this tribe, will I not get junk mail either? Is that what you're telling me?
The tribe will not disclose the fact that you are a tribal member on your registration and naturalization card. Your picture will be on it, your tribal number will be on it, and that is up to you to manage. Because I'll tell you one thing that it took us a while to learn in fighting organized crime, and that is you never have your most basic documents at point A. They're just not safe at point A. You have them at point B or C, you hear me? But not at A, because they come in and raid without the documents. They come in with sledgehammers and pry bars and break up the place, and then they'll throw distillate around and light it and burn it down. I have lost two nice homes because they burned them down after they broke in and raided them. And what were they looking for? They were looking for an affidavit that was given to me by the head U.S. Marshal for North Dakota. And I'll tell you, that's a barn burner. Yeah, and he had an attorney type it for him. He had a notary witness it, and I was present when he did it with another witness. Yeah. Now, when you got a federal judge and a U.S. marshal, I mean a U.S. attorney, ordering the U.S. marshal to go out and kill somebody, there's a problem in the system.
And you're saying you're saying you've seen that happen?
Yes, and the U.S. Well, I seen the U.S. marshal dictating it to a lawyer that was typing it up. And I saw the U.S. Marshal sign it in front of a notary, and when he got done signing it, the notary notarized it. He looked it over again to be sure it was absolutely right, and he gave it to me. And he said, "Ron, keep this affidavit safe." I said, "What do you want me to do with it?" He says, "I don't know what you can do with it. You'll figure that out, but keep it safe."
Can you elaborate on what nature of that affidavit was?
Yeah. He was ordered by the federal judge and the U.S. attorney to go out and kill Gordon Call and whoever was with him. And he refused to do it. He said, "Give me the warrant. I'll call him and he'll come right in here. You can deal with him as you see fit."
I believe I know who Gordon is, but for the sake of the listeners, would you please describe who he is and why they wanted him dead?
He was a farmer in central North Dakota, address Medina, and he had been able to convince people to stand up against the farm foreclosures by the banksters. And they'd go to auctions and so forth, well-equipped and so on and so forth. They never threatened anybody, but the appearance-wise was such that the bankers decided, "Look, we can't have this anymore because we're not generating enough revenue from these auctions." And so orders came from on high to order him killed and whoever was with him. And on the day that they set that up, they got a prisoner out of a federal prison in Marion, Illinois, to hit up the U.S. Marshals, and went out there. And, of course, he got killed along with a U.S. Marshal, and four got wounded, and the rest ran for the hills. Because Gordon was that good a shot, right from the hip. I mean, and so then they faked the death. They never did find Gordon's airplane. However, he wrote to me from Mexico, and the last time he wrote for me was September of 1997, giving me an instruction, and it was an appropriate instruction.
Now, how did he get it delivered to you in 1997 if you didn't have a mailing address?
It just showed up.
Okay.
So it was hand carried. Are you hearing me?
Yeah.
And I still got the envelope. You hear me? And I still got his original document. And his phraseology is his. And he died 4 years ago in May of old age.
Well, I trust that you still got a copy of that affidavit in locations B and C.
How about the original? You're right.
Probably D. Probably location D and E, maybe. I imagine that if something ever happened to you, that somebody would bring that out to the public, would they not?
Yeah, a member of the A team would bring that front and center.
Well, you've had a rather interesting life, Ron.
But people give you, within the system, give you tools so that you could be successful in cleaning up the mess. All you got to do is give the appearance you're standing up for what's right. And, of course, you never back down from standing up for what's right. But you don't threaten anybody either. You just do what's right. And take that position, and then don't sign away any of your rights with with a pen in your hand. People are doing that. Why do you think they want your signature on this and your signature on that? That's your permission. You don't give it. If you prepare the document, yeah, it's okay for you to sign because you know what the intent is and you prepared it to the best of your ability. But their stuff is strictly stacked for them. Well, anyway.
I was just sitting here thinking of all the times that I had signed something or put my name on something that I wish I hadn't. And I suddenly realized that we don't have enough time for me to sit here and think about that. It would take me a while to contemplate that.
Yeah. And if you got corrupt bankers in the area, yeah, you can get them out of the banking business. Got seven out of North Dakota. I got two stopped in Minnesota. And those that are very good at it, are a member of the organization out west known as the Mormons. They are awful good. And they're in charge of the San Francisco Fed. They are good. They do what is good for people. Believe it or not, and I'm not a Mormon. The first time I got the front page article and with my picture on it in the Fargo Fulham, that's what I call the Fargo Forum, I was no longer welcome in a Lutheran church. Well, gee, if you're not welcome there, there's no sense in attending. You know, so I stopped attending. Well, the Mormons are the only one that handed me the book and said, hey, Ron, you're welcome. If you apply, you will be accepted. I haven't applied, but I'll tell you what. They stand up, and they have people in political positions, and they can get things fixed that take others years. They can do in a week, week and a half. Unbelievable. And that's for the good of people. I haven't seen any of the bad side of them. I don't know if it exists. I've never seen it. but at least I'm welcome someplace.
Well, we've got about 25 minutes of show left here, and I'm just wondering what we haven't talked about that you'd like to talk about tonight.
Well, Red Beckman, his reputation has been excellent all of the years I've known of him, and so I appreciate that. He's always stood for what's right. You hear me? And so, I mean, he's not a bullshitter, he's not a liar, and he does stand up. And he knows what it is to feel the tough side of government trying to harm you. So be it, you know, but his character is still there. And I'm grateful that he exists. The other thing is, I want you to know, ladies and gentlemen, that you got to get a few of the basic books. And you can get them when the local library throws them out once a year. You know, some of the law books, especially the state statutes, for instance, because the state banks, they did pass in the legislatures of these state foreclosure statutes. And so you need a rule of the court book. Also, federal rules of civil procedure is extremely important, as well as criminal procedure. Because it is really something. The people that aren't charged with a crime, in fact, these statutes are not authorized to be charged criminally, and these people have... That's the last thing they think of. Well, I've been charged. I'm charged. No. In many cases, you're not. And then in many other cases, you're not charged lawfully. And I want to tell you, when you talk to me, I deem you're innocent until somebody's proved you guilty with an honest effort and that you got due process. As at that point in time, then I'll believe. But not until then, because there's so much dishonesty in the system. And why is it dishonest? Because they don't know the law and aren't willing to stand up for the law themselves. Are there some good attorneys around? Yeah, not many, but there's some. Are there some good law enforcement involved? Yes. And you can count on any state, except Florida, you can count on about 50% of law enforcement are relatively decent people. Half of them should be loaded aboard a whaler and shipped to the North Sea and used for shark bait. They're just bad news. They don't deserve that kind of position. They certainly don't deserve any respect. But the good ones are harnessed so that there isn't much they can do about cleaning it up. But you sure can, because you have the right. Remember, all these people are your employees. Yeah, and you have an administrative remedy. Clerks of court strip files, turn them into the head clerk of the state, and demand the investigation and removal. And if it's a county clerk, get the hold of the county commissioners and say, hey, yeah, you stop the check to this person for file stripping. That's going on a lot in this country, file stripping. I'm telling you, there's some of these clerks or court administrators are getting two checks, one from the taxpayers and the other from organized crime. But a lot of this stuff coming out in the mail is signed by clerks and not judges. Man, I'll tell you, get the ball rolling. Administratively is where it is, and in the North Dakota Rules of Court Book, they've got both the judicial conduct code in there and the lawyer's professional responsibility code in there. I used to work hand in glove with a gal by the name of Berg. She was great. And I'll tell you, we cleaned up a lot. But she had to have somebody that would stand up and bring the complaint and do the follow-through when it comes to testimony. I'm telling you, you don't sign a complaint against them and get it in there, they don't have anything to work with. Vivian Berg was her name, and she no longer got that office, but there's a plaque in her place. But anyway, we got a Secretary of the Supreme Court that's came out of the woodwork over the years and is pretty darn decent right now. They won't interfere with people's rights. it's important that those rights be administered lawfully. But I'll tell you, you can't count on anybody doing it for you. You got to take a look in that mirror just in case you don't know who's in charge and do the process. And in the court process, your job is to make the record. And guess what? You got to put it in the record and you got to testify to it under oath for it to go into the record the judge is going to make the decision off of. You get the record made, no matter what happens, you'll eventually win. If you don't get the record made, you get to lose. And your right of appeal, well, it is sacrificed because the record is not made. Now, and I also want to caution people, please don't use what I call patriotic bullshit in your fight against organized crime. Use their system because they don't know it either, and you will. I can remember a friend of mine who stood up for his rights absolutely. And before the Supreme Court of North Dakota, one day, one justice asked him, you know, Mr. Stewart, how far do you think your constitutional rights go? He got out from behind the podium, walked right up to where the judge was sitting and took a swing at him and said, right to the tip of your nose, sir, but if I hit you, I've gone too far. Well, that judge didn't have any more questions. I'm here to tell you. That's how far it goes. But you don't injure anybody. You work on shaping up under their privileges because you have a right to be the complaining person for the removal of the privilege. And when they realize you know that, they don't want to mess with it because they'll have to lose their privilege. Why? Because they know they've done a lot of dishonest things. And once they start looking into them, zap, they'll find several. And then they're done forever. Yeah. I could go on and on and on, but, you know, the bottom line is it's you. It's still your country. The law is in your side as long as you assert it. There's another thing in criminal charges that people miss terribly, and that's the Sixth Amendment. You've got to read, there can only be one nature and one cause per count. Hear me? One nature, one cause per count. And you'll see that they're improperly prepared. There'll be more than one nature, and oftentimes more than one charge in the same count. That's going to deny you any clear determination as to guilt or innocent on that particular cause of action. Hear me? One, yeah. Count one has to be that way. Count two has to be that way. Count three. And if they're not that way, you move to dismiss them because they're improperly done. And not only that, if they redo it, hold it, I can't be twice held. And it's like the freedom of speech. Man, you don't go out there unless you're asked by somebody that you have the name of in writing, with a date on it. Then you can assert your First Amendment right of freedom of speech. Otherwise, you're out soliciting. And that's commercial in nature. Whole nother set of rules apply in these commercial in nature. But you certainly have a constitutional right to speak. You've got a, certainly got a constitutional right to assert all of your rights. But you've got to do it in paper, and then you've got to testify to it also under oath. And if a judge won't let you go on the stand, just say, Judge, for the record, I let the court recognize I'm under oath. And everything I put in here is true and correct. And then you can object to anything the other side's putting on because it won't be under oath. It'll be hearsay. And if you don't object to hearsay, the judge is going to take it as if it is. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, just checking. I heard a beep here. And that's so important. And, of course, people get rattled when they go, too, and people are scared of jail. I'm telling you, if you're afraid of jail, walk into one day. and be shown around it so that you get rid of the fear. You'll find more people in there whose word is good than you'll find out in the street or in any hallway of any church. You see, they got their attention. And I'm going to tell you, 35 people walked out of this federal pen that I was in writing just those two letters because they were never charged in fact. Now, that's quite a bunch, quite a little effort. The same way at the state pen. But these were a lot younger people there, but they just didn't know sick 'em about the law. My God, they walked out too. 35. Of course, you see, about the time you end up in there, if you're in there permanent, like they say, it's going to take you about 7.5 months to do the process and work through it in order to get out of there. However, if you operate on the basis of an improper process, you can get out by finding their shortfall right away. I had the warden come to me one day and said, "Ricky, why are you here? I looked at your file, and I don't understand why you're here." I said, "Well, Tom, I'm a political prisoner." He said, "You know that fits." He said, "Get your paperwork in to be in front of the parole board, and I'll see to it that you are before the parole board. The next one is coming. It's only in a couple weeks," he said. "I'll see to it you're there." Well, I was there, and 2 days later, I was on the street, and I got a hug from the warden. He shook my hand, gave me a hug, and said, "Ricky, keep at doing what's right." Now, you can like a guy like that. As a matter of fact, everybody in that prison liked the warden. You want to hear the rest of the story, like Paul Harvey would say?
Absolutely. And now for the rest of the story.
He was a prisoner in a federal prison in Miami, Florida. And he applied, upon being released, he applied for wardenship at the penitentiary in North Dakota. And, of course, he appeared, and he's a nice-looking guy, you know, big guy, nice-looking, decent, very knowledgeable in the law. How do you think he learned that? You know? And he knew how to run a prison the way it should be run. And so he was hired above all the rest of the unapplied. First class guy. I'm here to tell you, no scams, no cheating, just follow the rules. Yeah.
We've got about 12 minutes left. Red, do you have anything you'd like to talk about in these last 12 minutes?
I'd like to ask Ron if he has used the Seventh Amendment and the common law in Rule 38 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. We've had some pretty good luck and some pretty good outcomes in places where we've used that, and it's just one of the things that's been there all the time. But through our education system and the media and all that, we were basically shortchanged, and we didn't learn about the Seventh Amendment, common law jury, where the jury is the supreme court of the land. It's the highest, the Seventh Amendment common law jury is the highest court in the land. And of course, a common law jury, you can educate them after they're in the courtroom. The judge has no control over the common law jury. The Justice Department, the Internal Revenue Service, all these different alphabet soup outfits, they all know. They know all too well that they are in trouble simply because people are fed up with this nonsense that they've had to put up with and this dishonesty, the criminal element in government. And so, as I said earlier, there's changes happening right now. It's coming. And, you know, I'm going to be 83 here in just a couple of weeks, a few weeks here. And I'll tell you, it's the most exciting time of my life because of what I see coming. And it's people like Ron and their you know, their stick-to-itiveness. They're not backing off. They know we're working against the criminal syndicate, and they're not bashful about saying it and calling a spade a spade. And so we've got reason to be pretty optimistic about what's coming here. Of course, the economy is going to continue to deteriorate, I think. And every time the economy takes another dip down, more Americans become, activists in this political process. They start learning the hard way about what's going on. So all I can say is that I wish we had a lot more Ron Brockies around, because they're getting the attention of the criminal government that we have, and I'm thankful for that.
Well, Ron, you got 8 minutes. You want to close us out with some thoughts?
Well, I haven't used Rule 38, but I've used Rule 35 a lot. And what people don't recognize under Rule 35 is that the court that sentences and enters the judgment on you, they lose jurisdiction after 120 days. So they can never get that jurisdiction back unless you sign a contract for probation. Because they'll have the court services persons violate the contract you sign, which extends the length of time. And that's not good. So they don't need to sign that stuff. I mean, I got violated on a contract that they didn't have, and finally I informed the federal judge, hey, buddy, here's the situation. Produce the contract or skip it. Well, he come in and sat down in the courtroom, but wouldn't start the case. Why? Because there's no subject matter jurisdiction. So he informed all of the news media and so forth that I'm here today and that I don't listen to the beat of the same drummer. But he said, this is America, you know, this is the United States, and we don't all have to listen to the same drummer. And so, Mr. Ricky, I wish you a Merry Christmas. And he heads out the door, and he gets halfway out the door, and he turns around and he says, Ricky, you're not entitled to any benefits under probation. Right. I didn't want the adversity under probation either, because the questions that you answer monthly are rigged to where they can violate any answer at any time. They're not answers that you can answer, in fact, and so they can say you lied to them. You're not following the rules, all of this, and then violate you back. But the bottom line is, you got to give them jurisdiction. They got to have that, and not your job. Well, you make them earn it. Because in the final analysis, without it, you get to win, even if it takes on the appellate level. I can tell you this, I did 29 petitions for certiorari to the United States Supreme Court, but they never, ever considered hearing any agricultural issues. They just never did. So I never got a chance to brief an oral argue it. However, in the state, yeah, everyone that I lost, I appealed up and went for oral argument, except for when I couldn't be released from a facility to be there to argue. Nevertheless, we won the big one, and that's it. Also, don't count on U.S. Marshals or any of them following even the Eighth Circuit decisions or any federal court decision. They do what they want to do. They're just unbelievable. One, we had to set up one day, and by golly, guess what? He got found mentally unfit for the job. He was ill mentally, and that was it. They had to put him into retirement because of his mental condition. That gets pretty bad, you know. And Machine Gun Kelly, the guy that headed the SWAT team out at our place, he come home one day all pissed off, took out his pistol and shot his wife twice. Well, when he was checking to see if he killed her, she grabbed the pistol and she knew exactly where to shoot. And you know what? She never got charged with a crime. But he ended up being buried. I'm telling you, there's people inside that can help. They just want to be sure you stand up. Because when you convince them of that, you'll get help from unknown areas, from unknown people that are inside that can't do it themselves. They got to have a person with substantive rights do the follow-through administratively and so forth. And so you do have the power. And I've been through hell and back numerous times, but I can still tell you, you do have the power. I just wish I'd have gotten the education. You hear me? In the grade school and in high school.
I believe that what you just said is vitally important for people to understand, and it's something that even if we know it and believe it, we need to be reminded of it, because I believe what you just said is true.
Well, 80% of the statutes out here are unconstitutional, so don't contract into them. They aren't going to fly unless you accept them. So you assert all the constitutional rights, period. And make them prove everything. And they're not capable. But also, I think that, you know, people all through government need to be taught the law in order to follow it, not control. Anyway, I like the laws. Yeah, you want to subscribe to unconstitutional statutes and win there? You can. But you make that decision, nobody else.
In our final 2.5 minutes, now that you've got a good connection and Red can hear you, can you give us the advantages and disadvantages of a state bank and what happened in North Dakota again?
Well, it's no longer available for development, in all honesty, because it's controlled under the Fed. It has to have the reserves there, and prior to that, it didn't. So it is controlled. And I'm a trustee of a private bank, but they wanted the Fed encouraged state bank examiners to shut down all private banks. And the one I'm a trustee of has been in existence since 1823 and still is. And it's phenomenal in size. And are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, you can only lend depositors funds with depositors' permission, period.
That's a bailment system. That's sound banking. That's what we had prior to the 1900s.
Yeah. Well, now we've got the people in power on the creation of capital, and by God, you've got a right to create capital, to rewrite capital you already created that you can't live up to the terms and conditions of. You've got a right to do that and do the follow-through. If you want, organize a place somewhere, I'll come and show and bring the law and show how it's done. Everybody has that right. But I'll tell you, everyone has the right to go to a government agency, too, for the rewrite of debt under terms and conditions they can live with. And if you ever default in the future at a government agency, you have the administrative remedy of write down a principal and interest down to cash flow, even if that's zero.
Ron?
Okay?
Or could I call you Brecky? You keep referring to yourself as Brecky. I should call you Brecky. We only have about 20 seconds left. I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's certainly been interesting and entertaining, and I really appreciate your wisdom and your courage. Red, any final thoughts in 10 seconds?
Well, the courage, of course, is very evident.
Well, we are out of time, gentlemen, and I just thank you very, very much. I guess I should have hit some music here, and since Dr. Kate took off and I'm not sure how to even turn something on, I'm going to have to try to fake it here, and I think our recording is, it's got a little bit of time left on the recording, so we're still recording, but we're not live anymore, I don't believe. We might be. For those people who are listening on the telephone, we're live, but the people on the stream are probably no longer live.
Well, I wish to thank all of those listening. All right, sir.
Well, good night, gentlemen, and thank you again, Ron.
You betcha.
Good night, everybody.
Hang in there. Red, have a good life. Happy birthday.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, First Chief Justice John Jay. Names synonymous with the spirit of our country, founding fathers of the USA. Over 200 years ago, they shook off the chains of tyranny from Great Britain by divine call. Citing 27 biblical violations, they wrote the Declaration of Independence with liberty and justice for all. But something happened since Jefferson called the Bible the cornerstone for American liberty, then put it in our schools as a light. Or since Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, Patrick Henry said, our country was founded on the gospel of Jesus Christ. We eliminated God from the equation of American life, thus eliminating the reason this nation first began. From beyond the grave, I hear the voices of our founding fathers plead, you need God in America again. Of the 55 men who formed the Constitution, 52 were active members of their church. Founding fathers like Noah Webster, who wrote the first dictionary, could literally quote the Bible chapter and verse. James Madison said, we've staked our future and our ability to follow the Ten Commandments with all our heart. These men believed you couldn't even call yourself an American if you subvert the Word of God. In his farewell address, Washington said, you can't have national morality apart from religious principle, and it's true. Because right now we have nearly 150,000 kids carrying guns to these war zones we call public schools. In the 40s and 50s, student problems were chewing gum and talking. In the 90s, rape and murder are the trend. The only way this nation can even hope to last this decade is put God in America again.
The only hope for America is Jesus. The only hope for our country is Him. If we repent of our ways, stand firm and say, we need God in America again.
Abe Lincoln said the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. So when you eliminate the Word of God from the classroom and politics, you eliminate the nation that Word protects. America is now number one in teen pregnancy and violent crime, number one in illiteracy, drug use, and divorce. Every day a new Holocaust of 5,000 unborn die, while pornography floods our streets like open sewers. America's dead and dying hand is on the threshold of the church, while the spirit of Sodom and Gomorrah vex us all. When it gets to the point where people would rather come out of the closet than clean it, it's a sign that judgment of God is going to fall.
If there's ever been a time to rise up, church, it's now. And as the blood-bought saints of the living God proclaim, that it's time to sound the alarm from the church house to the White House and say, we want God in America again. I believe it's time, America, to stand up and proclaim that one nation under God is our demand. And send this evil lifestyle back to Satan where it came from. And let the word of God revive our dying land. For Jesus Christ is coming back again in all his glory. And every eye shall see him on that day. That's why a new anointing of God's power is coming on us. To boldly tell the world you must be saved. Because astrology won't save you. Your horoscope won't save you. The Bible says these things are all a farce. If you're born again, you don't need to look to the stars for your answers. Because you can look to the very one who made those stars. History tells us time and time again. To live like there's no God makes you a fool. If you want to see kids live right, stop handing out condoms. And start handing out the word of God in school. The only hope for America is Jesus. The only hope for our country is Him. If we repent of our ways, stand firm and say we need God in America again. I know the only hope for America.
With a long